As we get started, turn with me to Zechariah, the 11th chapter. There's 17 verses in it, and I don't think we can get through all of it tonight, but we'll get through it. If the Lord's willing, we'll get through it. And this chapter, of course, Zechariah is kind of coming down to a close, and this is still from times from 407 to 403 B.C., a four-year period here in Zechariah that we're dealing with, and it is, you know, it's continually going with the times when the children were sent away, and at times also their return. And Zechariah has talked some about the return, but he's back into the situation to where it deals some more with, I guess, the subject of being sent away. We didn't maybe fully get the entire picture of until now. And this deals with, it says, prophecy with symbols. And so it goes back to a time when, before they, all completely left, Jerusalem, as we went down through with Jeremiah and Isaiah and those guys, and Daniel and some of the others that have been gone through. And we realize that I guess it's kind of like when you get into the Gospels, you can't look at one Gospel and get the entire picture of the things that went on. So maybe this was kind of the way that this is, because there's a lot of this that's still symbolic. And and it also talks about the time of the Antichrist and when the Antichrist comes. So it stretches, I guess, somewhat the course all the way from the 425 years before Christ to when the Antichrist is took care of. And so in this one chapter, it's kind of hard to get a really true picture of how and why these things were added or put in. But nevertheless, it's part of God's Word, and we need to look at it. And so we'll start with Zechariah 11. Chapter 11, we went through chapter 10 last time. This is study 143 in our study and walk, and this is the 16th day of August 2017. We're only about 4 or 5 days away from our big eclipse deal. We're going to be right in the middle of it. We're in the dark line, sure enough.
Not in the path. Yeah.
In the middle, yeah. And believe it or not, the Lord's sending something over Salem, and I don't know if he's ever done that before. Ah, Lord. Maybe the Lord's going to do something that the Russians didn't do. When they sent up the Sputnik, you remember when they sent up the first one that had the dog in it? Mm-hmm. We had a guy up here in Tomasi, and they said the reason that the Russians wouldn't send the Sputnik over to Tomasi is afraid he'd get the dog out of it and sell it. I don't know if he was that bad or not, but nevertheless, I ain't charging nothing for that one. So,
Lord, I hope
says in 11:1, open thy doors, O Lebanon, that the fire may devour thy cedars. So I don't know when this is going to take place. I don't have a time frame here. It doesn't give us a dating in the CB, but we'll go ahead and look at it. It said, open thy doors. And this gives you the idea of a speaker that was speaking to a group of people, and the speaker turns away from Israel, to whom he's been dealing with, and he's speaking and now addressing peoples of some other nation or nations. And he's speaking here to Syria, because this is where the trees of Lebanon are. And this is where the cedars came from to build the first temple. And you know, they went up in there and hewed them out and brought them to the temple site, and they were already done. All they had to do was just put them in place. And so they were the big cedars that took care of the roof system in the temple. And it says, open thy doors, O Lebanon, that the fire may devour thy cedars. And I'm wondering if part of that isn't a symbolic thing, but then as you look, you realize, well, maybe it wasn't, because it talks about Lebanon, and Lebanon is 38:44, and this is the chief mountain range of Syria. It said that the fire, and that's the word ash, A-Y-S-H in Hebrew, 784, that it may devour, 3981, Ocal, it may devour thy cedar. So before the temple would be rebuilt, you know, the Lord told us in the other books that they had contaminated the old temple, and so I assumed that it was going to be burnt up, and so it could be that thy cedars here could have been the live ones, or it could have been the ones that were in the old temple. I couldn't get the handle on that, and I looked, and I didn't get anywhere with that. But we'll just take it as for what it says here. And in verse 2, it says, how will fir trees, for the cedar is fallen. So it would seem that the fir tree there that is talking about the cypress tree, if you go to the Strong's and look at it, and it says, how a fir tree, for the cedars is fallen because the mighty are spoiled. Howl, O you oaks of Bashan, for the forest of the vintage has come down. So whatever fire happened, and I guess there's a reason that it was put in here, because it was probably the will of God that happened, or that it wouldn't really be, I don't think, in scripture. And there was trees there that the cedars got burnt and the cypress trees got burnt. And it talks about the mighty oaks. And the mighty oaks of Bashan. And they had a forest there that was a virgin forest that had never been anything cut out of it. And
the
so
forest of the vintage.
Yeah, the vintage was the forest, old growth without man getting involved in it, okay? It says, let's look at this for a minute. It says, howl, and that word is yowl, 32:13. It's one verse behind 32:12, which was yowlak, and this is yowl, and it means to howl, or a shout or a yell, or the sound of a consuming fire. And you know, when in a picture in my mind that these cedar trees were being burnt, and then it went on down to where the fir trees or cypress trees, then it gets on down to a point where it gets in a swampy place, sort of, because you don't normally see cypress trees away from where it can get plenty of water.
Yeah.
So when it says howl, you know, people, if it got that big, people would be warning people to say, get away, fire coming. You know, like you do out west sometimes. And it says, for the cedar is fallen. And I made the note here and said, both here and in Lebanon and in the temple, in the polluted temple, the tree is no longer sought after. And it says, because the mighty oaks or the mighty are spoiled. I guess that's the mighty cypress tree. The mighty are spoiled. The honorable and the majestic ones are no longer valuable. And then it says, howl, O ye oaks of Bashan. And Bashan there is 13:16, and it's a region east of Jordan, which includes Gilead and the Golan area. And it says also, the kingdom of Og, that Amorite king, this was his place of occupancy, the king of Og. And it says, in that area, they had the forest of the vintage, the virgin, inaccessible, saved forest. And it says, it is come down or taken down also by fire. Now, there must have been a pretty widespread great fire going on there sometime, whether it was at the time that the people were gone, or I don't know if it was when they come back. I don't know if this is the time that it's going to be in the future. I have no idea. But it was written about by Zechariah from 407 to 403 B.C. And it says in verse 3, there is the voice of the howling of the shepherds, for their glory is spoiled, a voice of the roaring of young lions, for the pride of Jordan is spoiled. So, evidently it was a pretty devastating thing. Let's look at that for a minute. It says, there is a voice, a shout or a yell from the rulers of the state. This is the howling of the shepherds, of the young ones. that were in possession of Lebanon at that time. And it says, for their glory is spoiled, not only the beauty of their land, but their livelihood now is in ruin and is unwanted and unusable. And this was the giant majestic cedars and cypress of Lebanon was always a mainstay for them, and they shipped these things everywhere, you know. And so, and it says, a great sound of the roaring of the nobles of the land, the young lions, for the pride, the arrogance, the pomp, and the haughtiness. That is, go on, go on, or like, almost like go on. 1347 in the Strong's, it says the pride. And so that's what it is the haughtiness and the pomp and the arrogance that these royals possess whenever they're in charge. They have complete control. It's that Jordan is spoiled, and they find that with all this no longer there, they don't have much they can brag about or deal with as far as making money for their causes and for their need. And so we find in verse 4 it says, thus saith the Lord my God, feed the flock of the slaughter. Let's see, is that all there is before? Yeah. Feed the flock of slaughter. Here Zechariah is represented as a good shepherd and is sent to shepherd the people whose rulers have destroyed them or killed some of them, sold some of them into slavery, and all the things that are going on that are bad at that time. And of course, the fire didn't help any. Thus saith Jehovah, my God, which is Elohim. He tells Zechariah to feed the flock, to tend my flock. And Zechariah is to be a representative here. And this is where the symbolism comes in. So Zechariah is representing a shepherd to the oppressed people, the ones that were left in Jerusalem that were going to be killed. You know, this was like Isaiah's wife. You know, she got caught up in that, and she didn't get sent to Babylon. She got burned up. And it says, those exposed were destined to slaughter, or destined for the deaths that were to come, because the best had been taken away by the ones that the Lord let be over them, and the poor of the group stayed there, and their fate wasn't good, for sure. And so Zechariah was part of this situation also. And it says, those possessors slay them and hold themselves not guilty. And they that sell them say, blessed be the Lord, for I am rich. Well, if you take over somebody's life and you can turn around and sell them, then you probably ain't got very much in them. And it says, and their own shepherds pity them not. And they call them people shepherds, but they were ones that had come from different places and was over God's children and had been carrying on this idolatrous deal with them, all this long time. So it says the possessors there, the possessors is 70, 69, and that's Kalnal. It says they slay them or take their lives. The possessors were the ones that procured these people as their own. And then they could slay them and not think anything about it, because it says they hold themselves not guilty. And they find themselves as owners innocent, because I guess they judge themselves and they ain't going to judge themselves guilty. And because that, that's the way people are when they take over a land or country or people that have no control or can't fight back.
Yeah.
And this was the situation. And it says, and they that sell them say, okay, whenever they sell them as slaves, and they brag. And they say, blessed be the Lord. For those that are free, they're free gifts to sell. And then while they're bragging and while they're saying this, they say, for I'm rich. Woo, look at me. I'm doing good.
Always complete the self.
Yeah. Look at me. For I am rich. I have become wealthy. And their own shepherds pity them not. Or the ones that were overseeing these people, they had no compassion for them. It didn't matter. It was like they were unwanted persons, and they do to them what they wanted to do to them. That's a terrible thing, but it happens in it happens all the time in the world, and especially now in Syria, it's like that now, because they're having very bad times over there. And it says, for I will no more pity the inhabitants, verse 6, of the land, saith the Lord, but lo, I will deliver the men, every one, into his neighbor's hands, and into the hands of his king, and they shall smite the land, and out of their hand I will not deliver them. Because I guess there's already been some sort of a judgment made, and God says, what you don't carry away, either you're going to kill them or I'm going to kill them. That's just the way it is. That's a bad thing. But this is Jehovah's oracle. He says, for I will no more pity the inhabitants of the land. So he says, I've dealt with them all these years and all these times through all these kings and with all these false gods and all these things, and I will have no more compassion. I'm fed up, pretty much is the way it goes, saith the Lord. He says, but lo, see and understand this. There is a but lo there. I will deliver the men, and deliver there is 4672, and that's Maltesal. I will deliver. I will give a hope unto the sons of Adam. Everyone into his neighbor's hand. So he says, I'm going to allow the neighbors judgment. So I'll just let neighbors take care of it. And into the hand of his king. So whoever is ruling at that time, or whoever has been set himself up to be king and judge, they're going to have control of this stuff. And it says that they shall smite the land, and that word there, smite, is 3806, and it's the word kalthash, almost like thrash. And it means to use bully powers and to get what they want, to rule and reign and control the people in the way that they'd want them controlled. And it says, and out of their hands I will not deliver them. And they all fall. And he says, I will not uphold the king's brilliant ideas. Because to deliver a lot of times means that there's some brilliance there. And here the idea is that we're going to do with them what we want to. And it could be for pillage or plunder. That these people are going to pay the price rather than by their own sweat, as they promised, as God promised Adam when he kicked him out of the garden. And so you see that things at that time were really maybe worse than we considered them to be. But verses 7 through 9 deals with symbols here, basically two symbols, and it's the things of a shepherd that goes out to watch over his sheep. And it said in verse 7, and I will feed the flock of slaughter, even you, O poor of the flock. And I took unto me two staves, the one I call beauty, and the other I call bands, and I fed the flock. Now I think this is Zechariah speaking now, because God had spoke verse 6, but here Jeremiah has been appointed shepherd of the poor of the flock. And it says this, I will feed the flock of slaughter. So I, Zechariah, tended the flock, it says in the notes. Even you, O poor of the flock. In quite a few of these people that had come in were of the Canaanite origin. It says the sheep traffickers or the Canaanites. If you go to the end of chapter 14 of Zechariah and read the last verse, you will understand. It says it is also used as typical as to what is unclean and repugnant to Jehovah. And so in the last verse of Zechariah, it says, when all the people gather into where Christ is set up his 1,000-year reign, that there will be no Canaanites in the group. None. Because he had told Israel to kill them all, and they never killed them all. Never did. And so here we find that some of these guys are the Canaanite, or the descendants of those. And it says this, and I took me two staves. What do you mean? What does he mean here? And I took unto me two staves. The staves are that which the shepherds use, and they are the crook or staff. They have a staff with a crook in it for catching the sheep that they want to move around or to do something with, where they have to maybe tend them or treat them from some kind of problems that they've got or whatever. And then there's...
Guidance.
Yeah. And for guidance, or even if they hurt or something, they can reach out and get them. Okay. And also, they have a club or a bat. And that's for getting a hold of the wild predators and things that get into the sheepfold or the sheep. And that's for, you know, doing war with whatever the taking care of the sheep, whatever it counts. And it says, the one I call beauty. And that is 5278 in the Strong, and it is the word Noam. Almost like Noam. And it's rendered graciousness or agreeable. And that was the staff with the crook. There, that was the one there, and the other I call bands. And that's 2256, and it's rendered union. And it could be used as a rope to tie together things. That if the shepherd wanted to separate two or three or four of the sheep out from the rest, he could crook them with a hook, tie them together, and they were in a union. They were in a group that he could handle for whatever reason he wanted to handle.
A whole lot easier
than separate. Yeah, than, you know, to watch them while they're separated. He'd make them a group together. Okay, so that's the two. One is called beauty, and the club or the bat was called bands. And he says, and I fed the flock or tended to their needs in verse 7. Now, we get to verse 8. And I think it goes back to Jehovah speaking this verse. It's kind of like Revelation, if you will. It says, three shepherds also I cut off in 1 month, and my soul loathed them, and their soul also abhorred me. And these shepherds are unnamed. The people in charge of other people, that's what he's talking about here. He says, I cut off or I sent away. And within 30 days, within 1 month, because the Jewish calendar didn't have more than 30 days. Okay, that's pretty plain. And it said, in my soul or my nephesh, loathe them. And loathe them is the same word kindly as cut off, or cut them out, or cut them off, because it says, and my nephesh loathe them, and that means to cut away as grain. It's when grain gets ripe, and you cut it down, it mows down, he cut them off. And that's what he done with the shepherds. He took three of them, somehow or another out of existence. And I don't know if he sent them away or if he killed them, but it doesn't matter. Then you get to verse 9. Then said I, so this is back to, I think it's back to Zechariah. Because it was his problem to feed the ones that were left there, or to see that they got fed as best he could. Then said I will not feed you. Well, this might be Jehovah. I will not feed you. Yeah. That dieth, let it die. And that is to be cut off, let it be cut off. And let the rest eat everyone the flesh of another. So times is going to get bad. So I guess this is Jehovah saying this. I will not feed you. And feed there is 74:62. And this gets pretty far back into the Hebrew lexicon there, and it actually means if you're going to feed somebody, it means to tend to the needs of that person as he was a friend. But he says, I'm not going to do that. And it says, that dieth. You see that. You see the two that's. Anytime you see that, you know that God's dealing with us. It's a double. It's a double deal. You know, a lot of times God would call people and whoever he called, he'd say his name twice. He better answer. And so he says, the dying will surely die. And so this is what the poor of the flock are there for. They're there to be sent off either as a slave or to be sent away or to be cut off or is going to die in the fire. And he says, and that is to be cut off or sent away. Let it be cut off. And that's the same word as you get up there in verse 8. But it says, and let the rest, or all that remain, everyone of the flesh eat the flesh of another. Or that everyone can, that they destroy one another. I guess if you get that hungry, it comes down to that situation. But 7, 8, and 9 is a lot of symbolism there in the fact that things are not good. Then we get to verse 10. And it says, and I took my staff, even beauty. You remember? We talked about beauty and the bands. And I took my staff, even beauty, and cut it asunder, that I might break my covenant, which I had made with all the people. So God says, I'm going to put a space in my graciousness. What was it? I guess it was on the other page. But the beauty was the staff, and it represented God's graciousness and love. He said, I'm cutting that in too. When it cuts it asunder, there's a space or a gap in there that God has disowned, really disowned those people now from his covenant. They're not, probably not considered, not my people. They're low am I now.
For good.
For good in this situation. Okay. So, he said, I took my staff, even beauty, which represents the graciousness of God and his blessings, and cut it asunder. Cut it asunder is 996, and the word there is bane, B-A-N-E, that I might break my covenant. It is a space between two things to make whatever he's talking about null and void. And here, it has put a space between my agreement, which I had made with all the people, it says, the tribes of which I had previously made. He says, I've now got a space between my agreement and those people. That's bad news, any way you look at it. That's bad news. And you go to verse 11 and it says this, and it was broken in that day, and so the poor of the flock that waited upon me knew that it was the word of God. And it had gotten so bad. It says, and it was broken, the agreement that he had made between Moses, between Abraham and his people. There, the agreement that was made in those days, and them that was left there, so the poor of the flock that waited upon me or was watching me. And he goes back and he gives you a place in there that will allow you to go back to 1 Samuel, to where when Samuel's mother went to the house of God and asked God for a child, and she was praying to God, and she had her eyes closed and her mouth was moving. And Eli says, are you going to pray to God while you're drunk? He thought she was drinking, and she said, I am praying to God without speaking it out. This is between me and God. And so God, Eli was watching, but Eli was God's man. And then she got what she was. She got Samuel, you remember the story. She got what she was praying for. But Eli thought, because he was watching her pray, he thought she was drunk. And so, the poor of the flock there, it said, that waited upon me, they were watching to see what God was going to do. Because it was pretty evident that they found out that now they wasn't tied to God with any situation like that. And they knew that, they understood their fate, and they understood that this was the will and the word of the Lord Jehovah. Now that is a bad situation. These folks, before it was consumed by the fire, they had gotten in a bad situation. God had literally turned his back on that point, that group. We got a little more time. It says, and I said unto them, this is Zechariah now speaking. He said unto these sheep traffickers, the ones that were killing and selling these people off for doing what they wanted to them. It says, if you think good, give me my price. So, evidently they had come to him to do what they might to him, even though he was God's spokesman. He says, if you think good, give me my price, and if not, forbear. So they weighed for my price 30 pieces of silver. So it says, now Zacharias said unto the chief sheep traffickers, or those that were selling these people off, if you think good, and good there is 2896, and that's Toby, T-O-W-B, Toby. If you think good, if you think that I am of beauty, or if you think I'm precious or useful or favored or sweet, give me my price or give me my wage or worth. And it says, and if not, forbear. And forbear there is 2308, and that's Kaldal. He says, if you're not going to give me my wage or my worth, then forbear me, forsake or leave off or leave me alone. And it says, so they weighed for my price 30 pieces of silver. And I don't know how they done it, but I guess they assayed his worth or his wage, if you will. And we'll read the note on verse 12 there. It says the wage was 30 pieces of silver. The damage for injury done to a slave. If you remember back to Exodus 21:32, God had put this in the law that if there was damage or injury done to a servant, then there was a price that whoever did that to him would pay the price. And this is not the passage referred to in Matthew 27:9. And it says that was spoken by Jeremiah, but this was written by Zechariah. So the 30 pieces of silver evidently held up in this situation there in verse 12. And we got several more verses to do, so I guess this probably is a good place to stop. Let me look and see you. Yeah, we can stop here and we can pick up with 13 and go on, because you got five verses left to go, and it's already 9:25 basically. So we'll go ahead and stop there. But this is kind of going back, I think, and picking up and giving you a little fuller picture of what happened when the children were carried away and how bad that it really got. A lot of times in the other books it hit the high points, but here it goes back to a situation. Goes back to a situation that's not good, not pretty. There's nothing good about it, but this is how God dealt with it. And He's not done with cutting things loose either. And then he tells Zechariah, take these implements of a shepherd. Because nobody really wants them. He's cut them things in too. They're no good to anybody. And so he tells him to do with them like the children done the one that he sent. But they done him
we
no good
either.
Yeah. And so they done him no good either. So that's a representation here of all these symbols and things. He goes right back to it ain't happened yet. We're still 425 or we're 430 years basically away from that time that you read in chapter 13 and 14. It's 430 years before they put him on the stake, but nevertheless, all this is leading back up to that too. And sometimes it goes further, because 16 and 17 talks about the Antichrist and what he's like. And kind of gives a picture of him. He says he's going to have a withered right arm. And one of his eyes is going to be darkened. And you remember when they elected Gorbachev president or whatever he is of Russia,
yeah.
And he had that patch over his eye. They said, a lot of people said, oh man, that's him right there. That's the Antichrist.
He's the one.
Because he had part of the symbolism that God writes about and gives to Zechariah to write about. So we've got a good bit to talk about before we get done with it. So we can, rather than getting into it in a very short length of time, it needs to be a little more space given to it, if you will. And so we're not under any restrictions that I know of. I hope I'll be here next week.
Lord willing.
Yeah, and the creeks don't rise too much, as the old saying goes. But thank you for your time and again going over this, and I'm not going to say anything about the badness of this thing, because it's part of God's word and it's something that he wanted man to know, or we wouldn't have it. And so this, I think, just kind of gives you a little further picture, and I think it comes in well because of where Ron is and his studies on Sunday morning concerning the times toward the end, that all things will be taken care of that way. So, again, it's good to have you with us. And pray for me, and love you all, and God bless you. Thank you for being with us.